This is ESPN Crick Info.
Hello and welcome to Talking T20. This week we're going up a notch in the company of a T20 world champion. First for the show, we're recording almost 8 years to the day Grime Swan and his mates won the World Cup in West Indies. Grime Swan, pleasure to have you on the show.
Pleasure to be on. Pleasure to be reminded about that World Cup win as well, T20. It is. I think it was yesterday. Eight years yesterday.
Just about 8 years, a day or two ago. Also in the show is Gaurav Sundaraman, a senior stats analyst in the house as always to dissect the data and offer his insights. Welcome, Gaurav.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Great. And I'm Srinath Sripad, your host for this episode, as we turn our focus to multiple things, really. We're going to talk about England's new breed of T20 superstars and then shift our attention to Swanee's craft, which is fingerspin and how it's evolved in the shortest format of the game over the years. Swanee, you were England's highest wicket taker in that World T20 in 2010. And it was a time when a lot of you attacking off-spinners were among the top bowlers in the shortest format.
Yeah.
Do you think anything's changed since then? We see a lot of talk about wrist-spinners today.
Well, there's a lot of wrist-spinners at the moment, but I just think at the time there weren't many wrist-spinners about. Not many good ones, anyway. The odd one here or there, I think Tahir was still playing for South Africa at that point. He might not have even started for South Africa at that point. I can't remember many leg-spinners playing for anyone else. There were more finger spinners around. It's just the way that cricket goes sometimes. Sometimes you've got a lot of wrist spinners, sometimes you've got a lot of finger spinners. But I think the one thing that's remained the same is that spin has always been at the top of the wicket taking charts in T20.
Yeah.
When it first started, everyone just thought it'd just be quick bowlers, spinners would get smashed. But it's not the case. The very fact that the less pace on the ball, the more pace the batsman has to put on it.
Right.
Especially outside of India, because the grounds tend to be bigger. In the West Indies, it's always a breeze, so you can bowl with the breeze. So the batsman's hitting against the wind. It was a wonderful time, and very enjoyable, actually, thinking back. I only got one wicket in the final. That annoys me. I should have had two. Should have had Dave Hussey. Cameron White caught a long off, but someone messed it up, missed the catch.
One of the best moments of your career overall?
Yeah, I think
right
so.
Right up there?
Yeah, I mean, the Ashes, I won the Ashes three times. That'll always be my favourite thing. I was a Test cricketer. I love Test cricket. I was very good at T20 cricket and one-day cricket. I sound like I'm bigging myself up now, but I had a good record in those forms. But they never meant as much to me as Test cricket. But winning that T20, it was the first sort of global tournament England have ever won in one-day cricket. And we should have won a lot more. And so that was a massive thing. I think we were just the best team at that tournament. We innovated. We picked Craig Kieswetter and Michael Lum to open the batting, who just teed off, and Kevin Peterson batting three just teed off. We bowled slow ball bumpers and wide Yorkers. Honestly, at the time, no one else did that. No one else did it. We had Ryan Sidebottom taking wickets at the top of the order, Stuart Broad. It was a really fun time, and very fond memories. Thanks for bringing it up.
Cheers. Gaurav, this is our fifth or sixth episode, and it's become a sort of an old chestnut to talk about off-spinners as being controlled bowlers. Swanee ended his career with an economy rate of less than 7. But what's the big difference between today and back then is the number of wickets he took and his strike rate. What do you think has changed with off-spinners over the years? Because today, the perception in the analyst table or even in dugouts is that the controlled bowlers are your finger spinners and your attacking bowlers are your leg spinners. What's changed since then?
I guess it's the quality of bowlers also. Like Swanee said, a lot of guys had played Test cricket. They were playing all three formats. Today, we don't see that. We see a lot of finger spinners play the limited overs, and we see a lot of, wrist spinners play limited overs. And
The
other way around. So, in terms of, I think, continuity, playing across leagues, and the ability to spin the ball irrespective of the conditions. You know, wrist spinners can spin it at any condition because just the nature of their action, the nature of the deliveries. But for finger spinners, they have to create chances. You'll have to create wickets. You'll have to have the good field placements, which is why they need more time, I felt. At least now, by seeing Test cricket, they set up batsmen. In T20s and limited overs, you don't have that time. And so I guess batsmen have also figured out, and with shorter grounds and bigger bats, batsmen have figured out that, maybe finger spinners, we just take the singles and twos, we don't attack them enough, and the spinners, they tend to attack and they get more wickets. You know, it's proportional to both. Because they attack more, they get wickets.
But also, one thing you said that is interesting is how much you spin the ball. I was a big spinner of the ball and always tried to.
The revs on the ball that you put in.
Which went against the grain for English spinners. English spinners traditionally didn't spin it very hard. We didn't have a backup to me in the finger spinning department because guys who didn't spin it very much got smashed in T20 cricket. So that might be a thing at the moment. If you look at the finger spinners around the world, they're not really giving it a rip. Left arm spinners are often harder to face if they've not big turners of the ball, because only one has to slightly hold up. Because they're bowling from wide of the crease, they have like a lateral sort of line that the ball's always coming into the pads. Yeah. One just holds up, get people caught on the boundary. So a lot of left arm spinners, finger spinners who've just grown up in T20, are useless when it comes to longer forms of the game, because they don't spin the ball hard enough. Whereas wrist spinners, it's hard not to spin the ball. If you bowl a wrist spin, you either spin it or you don't. So yeah, I think that's why the wrist spinners are doing well at the moment, because bowlers have to spin the ball a lot. They're rare, so people haven't seen a lot of them over the last 10 years, so these batsmen don't really know how to pick them. We've seen AB de Villiers and Virat Kohli over the last few days not picking googlies. And you think, if you went back 10 years, you think, there's no way Sachin Tendulkar and VVS Laxman would not pick googlies.
Yeah,
but these days, these guys, they're not seeing much of it, so they're not used to it. So it
the likes of Mohammad Hafiz, who was a one-day specialist, limited over specialist, he didn't turn the ball much. They were all control bowlers. Even Jadeja... Jadeja in Test cricket does not spin the ball much unless conditions favour. So people were just bowling... accurate line length, but they were not spinning the ball, so batsmen were not very scared. So, you know, I think that's a big change. Like Swanee said, if you have new spinners coming up who can actually really spin the ball on any surface, give it more revs. I'm not a spinner, but if you do that,
the more revs you put on the ball, the more you move the ball off its line, and the more times people miss hit the ball. That's what it's all about.
No, I'm actually interested in asking you. You were somebody who believed in the conventional off break and bowling and giving the revs on the ball.
Yeah.
Today we're seeing finger spinners learn all kinds of new skills. We hear Ravi Ashwin bowling leg spin.
Yeah.
If you were around today, would you still stick to your conventional off breaks, or do you think these variations are really important to survive in the shortest form?
I think variations help. But I think what's more important, I probably wouldn't, because I'm stubborn. And I knew that because I bowled so much in Test cricket and I was so old in comparison to a lot of these guys, I was a better bowler. I was more consistent because the amount of balls I'd bowled in my career. So I knew exactly when and where the ball was going to land. Until the end of my career, when I couldn't feel my hand anymore, that's when I knew I had to stop because I didn't know where it was going to land. Bowling leg spins, I could bowl a carom ball, but I wasn't very... I didn't have much confidence in it because I couldn't land it exactly where I wanted 10 times out of 10. So I tended to hardly ever bowl it. I had far subtler variations, but they're all based around like where I let go of the ball or working out the batsman. If you're on top of the batsman in his mind, it doesn't matter where you're pitching or what you're doing. That's all I ever focused on. It was a mental battle with the batsman. Where's he trying to hit me? And how am I going to stop him hitting it there? I'm going to get this man to hit the ball exactly where I want him to. And in T20 cricket, that was normally deep mid-wicket, because I know guys are going to come after me. If they hit me straight, I'm bowling too full and I'm not turning it. I wanted to try and hit me straight, but drag it to deep mid-wicket. Mm. And honestly, getting people out like that, I remember getting Jai Wadena out in Dambulla in the 2020 World Cup over there. That was as good as getting Sachin Tendulkar caught bat pad in a test match at that time, because I'd done exactly what I wanted. Even though it's caught on the fence, he ended up hitting it exactly where I wanted him to. So it's a completely different skill set. And I'd be perfectly honest, I'd finish bowling in a T20 game and always sort of sigh of relief. Phew, thank God for that. Because very rarely did I have games where it went horribly wrong and I got absolutely destroyed.
Yeah.
Because I think I was always just, I was looking at the batsman. I wasn't worried about not going for four, not going for six. I was going to get you out. I'm going to get you to hit it somewhere, see the back of you, look after my own figures, and that'll look after the team.
The interesting thing is when you look at numbers and you look at bowling pairs, I think I'd mentioned this earlier in the previous episodes as well, when a wrist spinner bowls along with a finger spinner, the batsmen need to change their strategies, you know. Ashwin bowled very well with Muthiah Muralidharan for CSK because they used to play out Muralidharan and they used to try to attack Ashwin and he used to get the wickets. Kind of reverse roles where Ashwin is controlling and you have the Mujib, who's getting the wickets.
Yes.
So sometimes I've looked at bowling partnerships, you know, a finger spinner and a wrist spinner bowling together may work in a limited overs format. So it's good to have this kind of variety rather than have too much of finger spinners or too much of wrist spinners.
Absolutely. One of the best things as a bowler is work out who your best bowling partner is. And don't let anyone know that you know. Just quietly say to him, so for me in test matches, Jimmy Anderson. If Jimmy Anderson was bowling at the other end, I'd be getting wickets because he let nothing go. He wouldn't give any free shots away. People would attack me more because they're feeling bogged down by Jimmy.
Yeah, and,
interesting. You spoke about
bowling partnerships, like you said, is a, even from a numbers point of view, from a statistical point of view, is very underrated. There are no metrics to actually measure how we have batting partnerships,
just
but we
no
don't
one
have.
Cares about the let's face it, everyone cares about batting. See, yeah. No one cares about the bowlers deep down.
But that's a very good point because Mega and Warne was one pair which they delivered constantly.
We'll now we have,
so I think that's an interesting aspect of the game which needs to be researched.
Interesting that he brought up Ashwin. Ashwin, in actually an interview last year on Cricinfo, he had said that the way to go is to bowl probably a short, wide and shit ball, and that could be the best ball to bowl in T20s today. And he's really been proven right. 51 wickets this IPL season have been taken off short balls by spinners. Underrated.
If a guy's on the move and he's looking for, the batsman's always looking for a ball in a certain area where he can hit it. Sometimes a short, wide shit ball is the best ball you can bowl. It's ridiculous. We always used to say in Test cricket, if we ever got someone out playing a really like to a rank bad ball, every now and again it happens. I once got Virat Kohli out in Mumbai, caught mid off, full toss, slipped out my hand. He was so surprised, he hit it straight to mid off, caught in a Test match. And we'd always get together, and someone would always go, "Well, you know what they say, shit balls get shit batsmen." And so we'd use that as a laugh. But yeah, you're right. I read what Ravi said. He was saying that the best spell he can bowl is 24 bad balls. Yeah.
Well constructed bad balls. Whatever that means. Balls.
But I know exactly what it means because if you're consistent, if I ran up and bowled six Test match balls or drifting away, pitching just outside off, I might get two dots, maybe a wicket, but two of them would get lapslogged for six because the batsman will line you up. If you bowl six balls pitching, your pitch map is all over the place. One spinning square, one going straight on, one 10 miles an hour quicker. The batsman just can't get settled against you. It wasn't my way of doing it. All I'd try and do is vary where it pitched because I couldn't really vary how much I spun the ball. It was either all or nothing. And my pride didn't let me bowl shit on purpose. But honestly, every now and again, especially if guys are coming down the wicket at you, a short wide one, you can get stumpings, you can get caught deep cover. And they're just as fun in 2020 cricket. You're not actually working a batsman out, so any wicket's fun in 2020.
How do you decipher that? Because it's really happening too much of a frequency for it to be a coincidence, right? You see people actually trying short balls, or do you think it's just a coincidence?
No, Srinath, I think with respect to T20 cricket, wickets are not coincidental. Wickets just happen. You don't plan for it. You can't set up a batsman in 24 balls. I think wickets just happen. That's why I keep saying that maybe people give too much importance to wickets in T20 cricket. It just happens when players play bad shots, players, the situation of the game.
Because you have 10 of them for 20 overs.
Yeah, so. And players trying to play different shots, players seeing how good they are against a particular bowler and they try to line you up and maybe that's the time you bowl a wide ball and you get stumped or they miss hit. Sometimes I've seen full tosses. There's a stat about 17% of wickets in the death actually go to full toss deliveries. Yeah. So you would think that full toss is the most easiest delivery to hit. But because maybe bowlers are trying to bowl the Yorkers, they're not getting it correctly, hits the bottom of the bat and the batsmen don't time it. So
because batsmen are looking for a certain area on the pitch where they'll know that if it hits this area, I'm going to hit it over his head. If it's that area, I'm going to pull it. If it's that area, I'm going to try and hit it over cover. And a full toss comes into none of those areas. When you look through, actually, all the players I ever played against, the only one I knew who consistently would hit low full toss for six was MS. Like, he'd worked it out that people are going for that. And if you actually bowled a ball sort of half volley length, you wouldn't go for six from MS. He'd hit you down the ground. If it was full enough to be a full toss, he had big heavy bats, short Indian boundaries, and he'd hit straight over your head for six. We'd never seen it before for England. We'd think, how did he do that? Yeah. And it wasn't until we actually worked out he's doing it on purpose. He's waiting for the low full toss. And that got us to think, well, maybe we should get these Indian-style bats with lower middles. You see, all the cricket bats people use in T20 now are that Indian shape, the big bow and a very low middle for that very reason.
Jade Dernbach in India doing exactly the same thing.
Exactly that, yeah.
No, but is that different from what you've seen in the Blast? Because it used to be the T20 competition between the counties at that point, and now there are more city-based franchises. Back then, you had a lot of success in the Blast when you played. Is the big hitting that you've seen in India and in international cricket and abroad much better than what you saw in the Blast?
I think it is better overall. I think players have got fitter, let's face it, over the last 10, 15 years. There's more money in it, so they can just play cricket and you have to be fit these days. You know, people have put more onus on fitness. The bats aren't... Bigger doesn't mean better with cricket bats. It's a myth. big bats work if you're a big, strong, heavy bloke. It's the bigger bats combined with bigger blokes that makes, you know, the boundaries are too small these days. The difference in England is a lot of the grounds are a lot bigger than, say, here in India. Like in India, when I used to bowl, I couldn't ever believe how small the grounds are. When you're actually out in the middle, you look round at your long on and long off. You can have a conversation without raising your voice. Thinking, Jesus Christ, that's not a very long way. Whereas in England, there are still a few small straight boundaries. But if you ever go to Lord's, the straight boundary there, even though the health and safety have brought it in about 15 metres, it's still 20 metres longer than it would be at, say, Mumbai or Calcutta. So it's a different game. It's harder to get as many high scores as you're getting in India, right, in England. But one thing they have done recently is start bringing the grounds, bringing the ropes in.
Thank God for that, yeah.
I mean, I just feel for all spin bowlers. I'm like, oh my God.
As a spinner, could you plan for each ground differently?
Yes, that's what I used to do.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it was all about the wicket for me. So I'd look at a wicket thinking, if it's going to grip on this wicket, I'm not going to go for more than 20 runs. That's my prices. There's no way, if this wicket's going to actually hold a little bit and turn, I should get 2 for 10, 2 for 12, if everything goes perfectly well. But there's grounds you turn up at and you know full well this is a belt. Trent Bridge, where I used to play at, brilliant one-day wicket. Just skids on, doesn't spin, fast outfield. I think, right, I want to go for 25, no more than 25. That's just over a run of ball. I'd more than take that. And so, you'd try and get batsmen to hit you for no boundaries whatsoever. That was one way. In 220, absolutely no boundaries. Very rarely happens, but if it did, you felt great.
Right, so just before we conclude the first part of the podcast and head to Swanee's views on IPL and Englishmen in it, we have a segment called Think You Know Yourself, which we do with a lot of cricketers. Okay. I'm just going to play a different modified version of it. I ask you 6 or 7 questions from your career, from your T20 career. You answer them, and we'll ask Gaurav if you're right or wrong.
Okay.
We'll see how well he knows your career versus how well you know.
I had no idea that he was doing this.
Questions haven't been leaked. Okay. So, absolutely no time limit, but we'll do it a little faster. So, the first question, starting with you, Swanee, is you made your T20 international debut against New Zealand in Feb 2008. Which other Englishman debuted alongside you?
Luke Wright.
Gaurav?
Yeah.
Phil Mustard.
Oh, man!
You've captained England in 3 T20 games and have a 100% win record. True or false?
False. Should be 100%.
True.
False. Swanee's right. You've lost one game. You won
lost
two.
Lost one game. And the game we lost, I restricted the West Indies, my captaincy, to about 110, and we didn't chase it down.
Okay.
I'm going purely with his body language.
Yeah.
But one of them was against India.
There you go. That's right. Between 2009 and 12, you're the second highest wicket-taking spinner in T20 internationals with 46 wickets. Who is the only guy above you?
It'd be another spin bowler. And
yeah, it's a spinner. Off-spinner, if that helps.
From Pakistan. Mohammad Hafeez.
Saeed Ajmal
is right. Not Mohammad Hafeez. Slightly
before
this time.
Yeah.
AB de Villiers. Your next question, Swanee. AB de Villiers has a single-digit average against you in T20 cricket. True or false?
True.
Two.
True. That's right. He's got an average of about 3.5 or something. I think you've dismissed him twice?
Yes.
Yep. You have 350s in T20 cricket. How many of them came while opening the batting?
All of them.
Two.
How many of them?
Oh.
Two. Two is right. One of them was, I think, number 3 or number 4.
Oh, man.
All of them came for your county, though.
Were you sent as a pinch hitter, though?
Probably. I used to open in England. I used to open.
Once with Stephen Fleming. Do you remember that?
That's right, yeah.
Wow.
I got my highest score, I think, was 85.
90.
Not off out. After about 40 balls.
Man against, of the match.
Against Derby, yeah.
Which IPL auctions were there that time?
Smashed it everywhere. Smashed it everywhere. Well, they were, but that's a test cricketer.
Your batting average in T20 cricket is higher than your bowling average. True or false?
False.
False.
True.
Oh. What was my batting average?
20 and 18 bowling average. You've got to be proud
I'll
of
take that.
Yeah? Well
I'll
done.
Take that.
Okay, last question, slightly tricky. In World T20 2010, you were the highest wicket taker for England. Two spinners had more wickets than you, one of whom was Saeed Ajmal. Which wrist spinner finished top with 11 wickets?
I know this actually.
Ooh.
Not asking.
Wrist spinner.
You're not going to guess this. That's the clue.
Is he Shahid Afridi?
No.
Stephen Smith.
Jesus Christ, Swanee.
What? Are you serious?
Yes. Yeah. Dirk Nannis was first for Australia and Stephen Smith was second.
He's an Australia fan, by the way, so you can leave that.
Stephen Smith?
Yes.
Well, there you
this
go.
This was in 2010, so.
2010. He got more wickets than me. That's when we won it,
yeah?
Oh, my Christ.
Well done.
Sometimes stats are fun.
Yeah. I did all right, though.
Yeah, you did well. Right, on to part two of our episode today. We're going to talk about Englishmen in the IPL. We had 12 of them, 13 if you include Jofra Archer this season. That's the highest from any country outside India, which is phenomenal. And Swanee, I'm going to start with you. Interesting, because back in 2010, you were one of the more ahead of the times guys. You advocated playing in the IPL for more exposure and, you know, for the betterment of English limited overs cricket, along with Michael Vaughan, your captain at one point in time. What do you think has changed from that day, from 2009, 2010, when you were among the best spinners in the world? How has the mindset in England changed about the IPL?
Well, amongst the players have always wanted to play in it. Not least, let's be honest, because of the monies, the riches that come from it. But it's been the board. There's always been, because of the way the English season falls, and it's very different to everyone else, obviously, because it's Northern Hemisphere and so far north, that our season starts, you know, now, or started 3 weeks ago. So our board were always dead against, like, letting players go with essential contracts and things like that. And there was, I don't think it helped that Kevin Peterson was one of the flag bearers who came over here, because I don't think the way he conducted himself back in England with the board especially endeared the board towards the IPL. They sort of tagged it along, Kevin's a troublemaker and he's being stroppy and he's doing this and that, and so we don't want our other players going down that route. So it was all a bit messy. I think where they've got to now is a good thing, that the board are more being more free and allowing the players to come over. I think it was always eventually going to happen. I still think it's a shame that there's a test match, you know, coming up that will see Josh Butler, for instance, possibly miss out on the IPL finals. For me, I don't think the players should ever miss a test match. So I definitely wouldn't have said that Josh should be allowed to stay out here. He should have to go and play test cricket for your country. But, yeah, the players have always wanted to play over here. And, you know, there's always been the argument it is for the betterment of your country and for the betterment of the players. But deep down, the riches that come from the IPL, that's why a lot of players have wanted to come over here. And I don't think you can hold that against the players. When you see, you know, people who are not as good as you from around the world earning big money, you think, well, hang on, that's not fair. I should be able to do that. But I don't think it was until the day the board turned around and said, right, OK, we'll be more flexible, probably with Andrew Strauss getting the job, who was never an IPL player, obviously, but he realises more how the players feel.
Was the 2015 World Cup, the 2015 disasters World Cup for England,
and what came
a kind of turning point with English cricketers going into the IPL? Because after that, we saw a change in the entire team lineup, the intent, the way England play their cricket, limited overs cricket, completely changed. The first two after that, when New Zealand came, 350s, 300s were chased down.
That's right.
And do you think that was a big moment in England?
It was the biggest moment ever, because Owen Morgan was the captain, and he said, look, enough's enough. We went to that 2015 World Cup with the worst possible team. Honestly, Alistair Cook's one of my best mates, and he was captain. And he wasn't captain, Owen Morgan's captain, but he was in that squad, and I spoke to him beforehand, and I said, you need to stop playing one-day cricket. He'd just got his test place back, Cookie, and he'd had a pause, and then just got away against India, remember, and had a really good game, and then, right, you've saved your test career. And I said to him, get out of the one-day team. You're not a one-day player. But he was convinced he was, because he'd grown up like me in an era where test players played, if you wanted to play one-day cricket for England, you did, basically. Unless you said, I'm not really that keen, you played. So we had all these players grew up, and myself and Michael Vaughan, I remember we did a radio interview, and we said we shouldn't have the likes of Ian Bell, Jonathan Trott, Alistair Cook in our one, Gary Balance in our one-day team. We should have Jason Roy, Alex Hales. We should have these guys.
Sam Billings was batting as we speak. Yep.
These guys who've grown up with absolutely no fear, of no idea what a good score is in T20 cricket, because the sky's the limit. Whereas we used to, in 50-over cricket, still think that 250 was a decent score, which was just embarrassing. People were getting 250 in the first 25 overs. So, yeah, definitely, 2015 was a watershed moment, because Owen Morgan got his way. He picked the players he wanted, the players he knew he could trust, to just go out there with carefree attitudes and sort of sky's the limit attitudes. And England basically put the talent that they've always had, they put it on show, because it used to get hidden away from the rest of the world, because people to think England were rubbish because we're picking the wrong team, not because we had the worst players.
So I watched you say make this point just in the show before this, that Gaurav should be sitting at the auction table. And he's actually sat at an auction table with Royal Challengers Bangalore. Gaurav, what's changed with respect to the perception?
He didn't do very well because he didn't pick me.
Might have been just around the end of your career.
Did he sign up for it? Were you allowed to sign up for
I put myself in the auction a couple of times, but... Yeah. Truth be told, at the time, we were only eligible for like the first 10 days or something. I'd always
put that didn't
absolute
help my
top pricing. And if someone wants to pay for that for like two league games, then they can. But it was no surprise when it didn't get picked up.
No, the question I had for him is, what is the perception that teams had? Like, you have a Billings and a Butler emerge and there's 10, 12 of them to choose from all of a sudden. What was the perception about English players? And is it just down to what Swanee said in terms of their availability that made them less of a...
Also, their performance in the international setup pre-2015, there weren't many English one-day players apart from maybe KP and Flintoff, and both of them did play the IPL because they were all-round cricketers. They were able to hit
Point at high... Morgan as well.
They were able to hit at high strikers. Morgan, maybe, again, in terms of people are looking at big hitting abilities, ability to hit a sixer, score at very, very brisk paces. Mm. Now, completely different because England players are doing that regularly for their country. People see them all over the year. They've scored some really big scores. And one of the biggest problems which franchises had with overseas players in general was playing spin. And that's still a problem, according to me. A lot of these players, you see Jason Roy, he struggles, Stokes struggles. So that's one reason which hesitates players from picking. And you know, you have only four overseas slots. And usually an all-rounder gets picked, a fast bowler gets picked. And you need an opener. So when it came to opening, which is why Hales and Roy took a lot of time to actually make it. Especially Alex Hales is playing his first IPL.
After sitting out for 10, 11 games.
Yeah, exactly. And that's after 3-4 years of him proving what he can do. And he has a 170 odd in one-day cricket. So that doesn't just come out of... it's not a fluke. He's genuinely very good. But the ability to play spin is still a problem, and that's why I still think unless they prove their ability to play spin more, then you will see them getting picked. Otherwise, what's happening is the moment an England player comes, they bowl the spinner or the finger spinner, and
it's
get out.
Because the Australians are very bad against spin on turning pitches, and yet they don't have the same stigma attached to them. I always knew against Australia, if you play on a turning pitch, I would always get wickets.
Yeah.
But they're still picked up. So there's stigmatism attached to it, but that's natural. Because if I was picking a team and I was Indian, I don't know about this, why the one-day team was so bad in 2015. I don't really, how would you know unless you're involved in it? Mm. So I would think, well, they're all terrible. I know that, the English players, what they're worth compared to someone like the Australians who have always gone for a massive high price. Because Australian cricket has been the best in the world for a long time, so people automatically think they're better than everyone else. Yeah. They're not necessarily better, but that's the perception at the minute. And when it comes down to the people spending the money, with all due respect to them, they're not the most savvy cricket minds out there, so they're always going to look for, if they're the best in the world, we get those players. A lot of the coaches are Australians, they'll pick their... No, I won't say their friends. They'll pick the people that they trust that they coach in Australia, so... That's how it is. But trust me, within the next 10 years, you'll end up with... There'll be truly multinational teams everywhere because the best players will just all end up in the same
pot. I think it's changing. What you said is changing a lot even this year as we speak because the Australian players have not done well at all, barring Shane Watson, which is a surprise. You know, you wouldn't start the IPL expecting Watson to do well and the Maxwells to flop. But that's how it's turned out. And even for England, it's only been Joss Butler. So it's not that there's now... there's not too much difference.
I'll tell you one thing I've noticed a lot is that nearly all of the bowlers are Indian, especially the spin bowlers.
Or Afghans.
Or Asian, I
subcontinental.
Should say. Subcontinental bowlers. Very few sort of like New Zealand, Australian, English spinners out here. True. And that I think a lot of that's slightly puzzling for me.
We've come to a point where there's no Sri Lankan spinner getting a game through the tournament. So
That says a lot about the standard of Indian spinners. There's a lot of good ones out there. But I think a lot of the franchises are missing out on the fact that there's brilliant spinners out there who, for one reason or another, they prefer... Maybe it's a lot cheaper to get like a homegrown talent who you know is going to be absolute low base price, $20,000, $10,000 or whatever, and can do a job, maybe only go for half of running over more over the whole tournament. But there's guys that... One franchise will cotton onto this and not put all their eggs in one basket for the batsmen. Batsmen get all the money. If you look at some of the guys, the bowlers from Australia, it's all seam bowlers, like Andrew Tye. does unbelievably well. There's some good leg spinners in Australia, trust me, very good leg spinners who aren't playing over here, who would do an unbelievable job.
Would you see somebody like Mason Crane get a gig? I mean, do you have any spinners in mind when you say that?
Not so much English spinners, to be honest. This is more because I've just been covering the Big Bash before, so I know that there's leggies over there who would do an unbelievable job. But yeah, if you're a spinner, if you're growing up in England at the minute, you don't think of the IPL. Mm. A lot of players have started, like Alex Hales stopped playing Red Bull cricket, convinced in his own abilities to get a massive price at the auction. He didn't even get picked up. He's only here because David Warner got banned for scratching a ball with sandpaper, which was good, by the way, that he got banned. But had it not been for that, you know, Halesy wouldn't even be here. So, you know, English players who... It's not a given that you'll get picked up in an auction. It's only one or two players since the IPL started who've been here all the time. Owen Morgan, he's not in it anymore. Oh, Shah used to come every year and sort of threw all his eggs in the white ball basket, but didn't really pan out for him. So there's still much, much more of a route down the red ball avenue in England.
We've seen early prototypes like the likes of Graham Napier and Mitri Mascarenhas, who've both been here.
Yeah.
But all of which leads us nicely to a point from our UK editor, Andrew Miller, and he brought this up a couple of days ago. How much of the IPL experience of playing in such a big league matter in terms of the big game experience that it offers? For example, 2 years ago, Stokes wasn't playing in the IPL and he had everything hinging on one over in a World T20.
Yes.
And he was competing against West Indians who'd seen this for years. How much of it matters when you start thinking about the IPL?
I think it really helps. The IPL, especially for English players come over, I said this earlier, like the noise surrounding a one-day game in India, it's a higher pitch, it's more intense. I mean, it's crazy when Virat used to come into bat or Sachin come into bat. I mean, the noise would go through the roof. It was far more intensive cricket than you were used to. And I think it does that. Now, these days, I mean, T20 is not small in England anymore. You get big crowds in English stadiums. They're big pressure games. They're playing the Big Bash. Trust me, there's no bigger pressure game than an Ashes game in cricket. And I never played in the IPL. I can tell you those who've played in the IPL, but there's no bigger pressure game than the Ashes. Trust me. So it does make a small difference. That certainly didn't. If Andrew's trying to say that,
I didn't try to mean that.
England that World Cup.
No. I was just saying that somebody like Carlos Brathwaite restored the world playing these sorts of games.
That was freak show. Yeah, but there's still no way in the world. That was because England didn't have anyone with experience on the field to walk up to Ben and go, mate. Wide Yorkers. Seriously, six wide Yorkers. They need 24. Six wide Yorkers, we win the game. And even when he got hit for 1-6, you saw there was panic. There was no senior... Ben was the senior player. And Owen was still a young captain. They didn't know what to do. They panicked. They had white noise in front of them. I was screaming at my television. Honestly, I was at home. I was holding a baby. My baby was asleep in my arms. Bless her. And I was screaming at the television. I got into such trouble with my wife. Because no one would just say, bowl a foot outside off stump. For goodness sake, they can't hit them for six. Just do it. But they didn't.
What did you tell the West Indies boys? You were consulting for them, I believe.
But I didn't tell anything.
Have you got your medal?
No, I didn't. I didn't tell them anything, you know.
Yeah.
It's just that, like Srinath said, it's about pressure situations which a lot of Indian cricketers attribute to the IPL.
Yes.
You know, when Bumrah comes in to bowl for India, they're very confident because he's done it against some top quality batsmen. Yeah. So it's a good
argument, but it's not. International cricket is as pressurised as anything. Mm. Trust me. When you're playing for your country at home, it's as pressurised as anything. And when you're running at the ball, and what the IPL is great at, players who've not played internationals, it's a brilliant breeding ground for them. Because you were saying earlier, they go into the Indian team now, and they all just seamlessly take to it like a duck to water. It's almost brilliant for selectors because they know these players will be able to cope with it.
Maybe the number of times it has happened, instances it has happened in domestic or IPL cricket is obviously much more than it happened in international cricket. How many times would you be defending 7 runs of the last over in international cricket? Maybe that's why, maybe that's a difference. You do it two times or three times a year, especially in 14 games.
Yeah, but maybe it's a good argument. Maybe it's a bad example saying Brathwaite and Ben Stokes in that game. Andrew, you're right, but you're wrong. Same breath.
There you go. Miller hopefully is listening to this as well.
He will be.
Right. Just the last question to both of them. I believe, Swanee has been asked this multiple times now. 100 ball cricket, yay or nay?
No, not really. I'm not that bothered, to be honest. It'll be exactly the same as T20 cricket. If they get the world's best players in to play it, I wish they'd stop. There's this thing at the minute, Colin Graves is barking on about It's because kids don't like cricket. They do, Colin. Down my cricket club on a Friday night where I take my son, there's 150 kids every week. It's done very blatantly to fit the TV. The TV only have a small window to get the game on, so they've tried to squeeze it in. Let's just be honest. If people were more honest in life, everything would be more simple.
I think people want to be different, I guess, more than honest.
But
they just want to be different.
Yeah, but be honest while you're being different. That's the whole thing. It's because of the TV rights. And yeah, we need to get participation numbers up, and they need to get it on terrestrial TV. The way to do that, they've already been given small time slots, similar to football games, so they have to squeeze
it into 3 hours.
And so they're saying this 100-ball game. But then to insult people's intelligence by claiming it's something else. That's why there's uproar at the moment. Just be honest. If everyone's honest, the world goes around better.
Gaurav, your thoughts?
I'm not a big fan of 100-ball.
Will you become a 100-ball analyst?
If it exists and if all teams play and it lasts for 4 or 5 years, then maybe yes. But it's a smaller version of a T20 game. Just assume that it was rained out for first 15 minutes and then it's 16.4 overs.
Exactly.
That's how you need to approach the game.
If they get the world's best players there and it's done properly and they get proper coaching in and they get proper franchises and stuff like that, it will be a success. You could play 10 ball overs. Yeah. You could bowl one over underarm. It would still be good if they do it properly.
Jimmy Neesham's already made a joke that he usually bowls 10 ball overs.
And
on that note, that's the end of Talking T20 Episode 5. It's been great fun with Grimes Swan and Gaurav. Thank you very much, folks, for joining.
Thank you. Brilliant fun.
And thanks to you, listener, for listening to the podcast. We're up on SoundCloud. We're soon going to be on iTunes. So like, share, leave your comments and subscribe to our podcast. Until next time.
You are listening to ESPN Crick Info.